Hello, you're listening to Just Screen It, Case Studies in Creative Distribution. I'm your host, Colin Stryker, and I am not an expert in indie film distribution. I am an independent filmmaker working towards making my first narrative feature, a horror film entitled The Grove. As I've been contemplating my own eventual distribution strategy, I've come to the conclusion that we need more data, more transparency, more information about how the various distribution options that are out there have worked for people. So I decided to start this podcast to help capture some of the experiences of those who have already been through it, whether successful or otherwise, and from those experiences, help both listeners and myself better understand this really complex, crazy landscape of independent film distribution today. So each week, I'll be bringing on a filmmaker who has self-distributed or been personally involved in the distribution of their film. My hope is that future filmmakers can take the knowledge gleaned from the show and use it to make their own decisions on how to best distribute their films. Hey, everybody. Today, I'm talking with Peter Hitchcock about making and distributing his feature film, A Song for Us. Peter, a UK native now living in Toronto, boasts a full and successful career working a variety of jobs in film and TV, but A Song for Us represents the fulfillment of a lifelong dream to make a feature film. The pleasantly understated and heartwarming narrative follows a 60s hippie as she reconnects with a former lover from the era. Peter's experience self-releasing the film through FilmHub touches upon the realities of distribution today in the face of oversaturated streaming platforms and social media promotion, but also upon the joy of filmmaking for its own sake, telling the story you want to tell, and the satisfaction of touching audiences however and wherever they find your film. This is a fun and enlightening conversation. It's a joy for me to bring it to you, my chat with Peter Hitchcock. All right, Peter Hitchcock, all the way from Toronto, right, in Canada?
That's right, yes.
Hi, how are you?
We still got sunlight coming in.
Yeah, I see the sunlight coming in. I expect over the course of this interview, because you're 3 hours east of me, that it'll get a little bit darker out there as time goes on. It'll stay nice and bright here. I'm here on the West Coast, so never been to Toronto. I've driven through it once. The traffic was awful, and the driving was, I couldn't believe how aggressive the drivers were. And I grew up in Boston, where, you know, which is known for its aggressive drivers. So, you know, but that's the only time I've spent in Toronto. So,
yeah. No, it is absolutely, it's war.
Yeah.
It's absolutely war.
And that's what it felt like.
I've got an EV car, and I'm kind of fairly fast with it. It's a real fast one, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of get ahead of people a little bit. No, the speeding and everything, the aggression, it's nasty. It's
really, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you don't have to deal with it too much. You can kind of get around it somehow. But anyway, it's nice to see you. Nice to finally connect with you and kind of talk about your filming experience and your distribution experience. So yeah, tell me a little bit about yourself and the film you made, and, you know, just give us a little bit of biography and we'll go from there. How's that sound?
I started as a cinema projectionist in England.
Wow. Okay.
I got a job. Well, before that, sorry, I was a child actor. I used to stutter. Mum sent me to a stage school. I sort of went to these big studios, and I said, this is just great.
Yeah.
And I quit school at 15, and I went to the labor exchanges where they help you try to get a job. And he said, well, you should be in a union, right? You know? And so I said, okay, how do I do that? He said, well, you've got to like be a projectionist or something. So I became a projectionist.
Interesting. And this is in the UK, right?
This is in the UK in Kingston upon Thames. And one of the usherettes one day showed me an ad for a job as a projectionist in a film studio. So I drove up in my bubble car, and it was a studio called AP Films, and they made Thunderbirds and Stingray, a puppet series, if you've ever seen it.
I don't think I have.
But it's a big rage over there, and I've been over there to talk about my experiences, because everybody sort of likes to know about how it was done, right? A lot of special effects in it. And then at 21, I decided to emigrate to Canada. I arrived in Yorkville, and Yorkville is a old hippie village. Yeah. Lots of famous singers were here, Joni Mitchell, all those people. And I sort of decided that I was going to make a film about Yorkville in the 60s. And it was like, what happens when you meet your long-lost lover, you know, so many years ago, right? You know, and that's basically the idea and stuff like that. Two time periods. So if you're writing a script, God, it's awful, right? Because, you know, so I had two time periods in my movie. We auditioned, and it's got lots of music in it, so I had to get the right singers and the right voices and all that sort of stuff to match up. We shot it in about 22 days,
Wow, okay.
and edited took a little longer, right? But I worked in LA. I should tell you that too.
Sure.
That as a film editor and a sound editor.
Gotcha. Okay.
I worked for people like Wes Craven, Hills of Eyes, and doing sound and stuff like that. And so I spent my part of my life working down there. And I actually had my twins living down there in West Hollywood. And we decided we're going to go back home because the boys had to go into school. And I drove all up the West Coast, camped, stopped off in Oregon and things like that,
Yeah,
and
nice, right?
drove home to Toronto. And so I've worked for a lot of TV stations and things like that here as a director, a producer, and done a lot of film editing and now video editing. I've been cutting on a Final Cut Pro for a long time. I made a TV series that was on PBS on how to make videos, and I wrote a book along with that. So I've sort of been, as I've been learning, I've been writing stuff and things like that.
Yeah.
And so I made TV commercials. I did a lot of armed forces stuff. I was over in the Middle East and all that kind of stuff, and a lot of tourism type of things. But honestly, I have to tell you right off the front is that it's better to be a promotional filmmaker than it is to be a feature filmmaker
Yeah.
with so much competition and trying to get it sold and marketed and everything else.
For sure.
And it's the marketing that's the biggest problem for me anyway.
Yep, you're not the only one.
Yeah, Tubi's got like what 75,000 movies, and I'm competing in that kind of world. And the reality is that it's very difficult to actually get my money back, quite honestly.
Yeah, understood.
I'm quite happy. I'm fine. I did it for the love of filmmaking, and as you can see, I'm a bit old now, and it was my last kick at the can.
I hope not, but I get what you're saying.
So I had to. So I. That's one of the reasons for doing it, And so yeah. So I had a good life as a filmmaker. We had all ups and downs, like every filmmaker does. Starving and all that sort of stuff. We had twins and had no money back in the 70s. So, and I worked in Ottawa for the Canadian government as well, making films for them. So I sort of like, and I'm a cameraman as well, I should tell you. So I shot film and video, and I had this big Betacam, God help,
Yeah, things have changed so much.
haven't they? And so it's all been a very pleasant experience. And the starting off working on these puppet shows and doing the special effects and all that sort of stuff was lovely. It's a good start.
Yeah.
When I came over here to Canada, I didn't know anybody, and I got a job at the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation within 3 weeks in editing sinking rushes to
Nice.
Tapa, right?
Yeah.
It's been a real pleasant trip, actually. And my son's going off and being a filmmaker too now, and
Nice. Really cool. I think some of this comes from some of the biographical material that you sent to me, but I think that there's so it sounds like you've had a good long kind of professional career. You've done a lot of different kinds of things, worked a lot of different kinds of jobs sort of in the industry. But I believe that this was like kind of your first feature film that you just kind of helmed yourself. Is that correct?
That's right. I completely just that. I shot a musical drama many years ago, and that was on CBC and shown in Sweden of all places. And I've done music videos and things like that. So this is kind of quite a big project for me, and I had to fund it, right?
Okay. So a lot to talk about here, but I first, what kept you from doing it earlier? And then what kind of went into the decision to just finally, okay, I'm gonna kind of jump into this pool of water or whatever you call it, jump into the ocean and make the dive and make this feature film. What was that process like? Kind of finally arriving at that decision to make that, and that's the expression I'm looking for, make the plunge.
Make the plunge.
Yeah, right. Take the plunge.
Well, I think I did make a kind of a science fiction movie. I couldn't raise the money for it back in the 70s, right?
Okay.
It sort of put you off working the feature business. And so it was obviously documentaries for me and things like that. And I did one musical drama, and that seemed to go well, I guess, and got some sort of award. But It was the money that I needed, and that was really the bottom line.
Yep.
Commercials, and I was working for Polygram, a whole bunch of, I have to remember all the names now.
But, oh, no, that's all right.
But so I was making a lot of music videos and that kind of thing, which was kind of creative, and it had budgets, right, you know, and,
sure,
and TV commercials. You shot in studios, and we had sets and actors and things like that. And I would, you know, travel around all over Canada filming and stuff like that. And it was just, and doing a lot of wildlife stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't work on junk, you know. I definitely felt, well, I should work in television.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there was one series I worked on as a field producer, and I never heard the term field producer, which was really directing and writing, coming up with the concepts. And I had a crew, right? You know, and
yeah.
Sort of like stories of about, you know, what happened when people met famous artists or something like that. One guy wanted to ride buffaloes in the Calgary.
Wow.
That was his thrill of a lifetime, right? You know, and that was all kind of like scary stuff to me. And you know, so it was like, those sorts of like TV shows and things like that that I had some experience with. I did a series called Fitness Over 40. And I had a bad cold when I was directing it, and I pulled the whole thing together in a studio, and we shot it in a studio and stuff like that, and that aired, you know, all across Canada, right? You know, it was like some rough times. You know, my wife was a graphic designer, so she, when we were down in LA, she was designing opening titles for Grease and things like that, and posters and stuff like that, and record jacket.
Yeah.
So between the two of us, it's been both of us have been working at this film, and all her life, you know, she's providing me with a graphic design or ideas or feedback, you know. And I've gone through the early stages of Media 100, if you've ever heard of that program. That was an editing program.
Yeah.
So I was the first in the country to actually go digital.
Wow.
Digital editing, right? You know, and I had 3/4 inch, and then I got, and I had Betacam, right? You know, and so I've been through all of those changes,
all
and
those technological changes. Yeah, right.
Really kept up, but it's been the corporate stuff, you know. Like I shot all over the States, an 8-week tour shooting for a company called Prudential, which is a big developer, right? You know, and they own the Hiltons and the Ritz and stuff like that. And I came back with so much. I ate so much that I came back like with another 22 pounds or something like that.
Yeah.
On me. But we had, if we wanted helicopters, you know, we could have helicopters. And one experience was I was flying around the Empire State Building in New York. When we got down, I realized that my seatbelt wasn't on.
We're
flying with a, you know, inside a helicopter, just trying to get a shot. There's like stupid things that you're doing.
Yeah.
And I'm admitting it to everybody now, you know. But
Right. So kind of going from that then. So did you actually like kind of retire before you made your feature, or are you still working freelance? Like, what's your kind of working situation now?
It seems that right now, what I'm doing is I'm trying to market the film.
Yeah.
And that's been the hardest venture going, you know. And I've hired PR companies in England and here, and it, you know, of course, it only lasts for a little short while, and then you go, oh no, what am I supposed to do next, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
Like very, very little help from anybody to try to get some sort of promotion or stuff like that. So I didn't want to pay out any more money because it's quite costly hiring these PR companies, right?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
So I've been trying to do things on using Facebook ads.
Okay.
And so that's been one fairly, fairly good way of doing it, actually.
Oh, good.
And I've got a Facebook, you know, just devoted to a Song for Us movie. And I try to keep adding things and stuff like that, you know. And I made a behind the scenes video just recently.
Nice.
You know, and that was kind of more for the crew than anybody, right? You know, this is what we went through, right? You
know, yeah.
And all the things that go wrong on a shoot.
Right. Absolutely.
Over the sea and stuff like that. And I sort of, first time I see myself in front of the camera, right? You know, talking like that. And, well, he's got a sense of humor, right? You know.
So talking about A Song for Us, was it entirely, if you can comment on this and feel free to not comment if you want, but was it entirely self-funded or did you get outside financing?
It's entirely self-funded.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Everybody got paid, and that was really important
to me. That's nice. Yeah. didn't want to just like have everybody work for free. You wanted to have a kind of a paid crew, and
it was non-union.
It was non-union, right? Yeah,
which was more of a challenge because you had to interview many, many people, and we videotaped everybody that came in, and looked at them. We worked very hard at that. I had a good production manager.
Yeah,
helped me along the way, which is really important. We kept to a good time, and we had some problems like every shoot that
sure.
does, right?
You know, absolutely.
I was going over in a ferry, and the dock people held me back because I shouldn't have been shooting, and they had no word that we had a permit to do this, right?
Yeah, right, you know, right, yep.
And that delayed things, and then I suddenly got freed and went across and ended up making the last scene of the movie. Actually, it was a sunset, right? You know.
Yeah, nice. That was a very nice scene.
There was all those scenes, and you know, I should send you. I don't know. Did I send it to you, the behind the scenes, or I can send it to you?
No, I haven't seen the behind the scenes. I'm not sure if you sent it to me or not. I haven't looked at that for sure. But yeah.
But it was like, you know, the water would you didn't have any water in the houses and things like that, right?
Wow.
You know,
yeah,
get them off the lake, right, for the toilet and things like that.
Yeah, I think when you're making films, you know, especially kind of in an independent way like that, like your imagination can't come up with all of the possible things that could go wrong. It's just not possible. You know,
yes.
There's always something you never could have anticipated that will go wrong. It's almost guaranteed on any film set. You know, it's just, that's the nature of things with filming, but we do it anyway, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We got this beautiful cottage on Toronto Island, and it just turned out wonderful. I mean, the location is so important. We, you know, we did a lot of research in our locations. We shot with an EVA 1. It's an older camera, but it's a Panasonic camera.
Okay.
It shot
47K.
I thought, well, you know, that's great. I think it was Film Hub that I had to put 4K up. Then I discovered that 4K isn't even acceptable.
Yeah, no, right.
It's too much.
It's too big to stream, right? They don't want to have to stream that much data. And most people are not watching on 4K, you know, displays anyway.
Yeah, so I was a little disappointed with that, right? You know. But the film has gone to a lot of channels and things like that. It's been
sure, yeah. So yeah, we'll talk about that more. I definitely want to get back to that and talk about your kind of experiences getting it out there to various channels, to audiences and things like that. But I'm curious, like, as you went into making the film, sort of like, if I remember kind of what I read about your biographical information, it was sort of like a kind of a lifelong dream, I think, to make a feature, you know, of some sort like this.
Absolutely.
And so as you're going into this, are you, is like where it's going to end up and how it's going to do in a sort of, from a kind of a business perspective, was that on your mind at all as you were going into it? Or were you more focused on just kind of the pure creative aspects of it? I just want to make this film and get it out, and then we'll see what happens with it after that.
Yeah. It was both. I thought I could make some money at it.
Sure. Yeah.
I thought the film, you know, was using all professional actors. The singer was like a great singer, well known in Toronto,
yeah.
Right? You know,
yeah.
And stuff like that. It was difficult to just get it distributed, but Film Hub came along, and that was really good.
First of all, maybe just tell us a little bit about the film, you know, just to kind of give some context to it. You know, what's the film about? I watched it. It's a very sweet film, but just so our listeners kind of understand more about where you're coming from, what kind of movie it is.
Well, you know, when you sit down, you write down a whole bunch of lists of things, and your script goes everywhere, right? But the gist of it was, what happens when you meet your long lost lover from like 50 years ago? And so I thought, well, they meet under a lamppost or something like that in Yorkville, right? You know, but it never quite, we didn't use that. But, you know, so I started using Final Draft for writing the script. And we actually had I can't remember the name now, behind the scenes. It's a company of filmmakers that all got together.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these people wanted to get together as writers. And so I actually got a lot of feedback with like four people, we were five people. You know, we'd sit around and we'd take snacks and beer and what have you. And we'd read each other's few pages and we'd give feedback. And that was really helpful, you know. Of course, that puts you in your whole head in space where you didn't like it. What, you know? Stuff.
Oh yeah. Right.
Oh well, you know, burnout, right? You know, that was really useful. But I decided to just stop it and just like let me hear my voice, right? You know, I plowed into it. So it must have taken at least a year and a half to write over time, right? You know, and you put it away and you have another go at it and things like that. But it was a complicated script because of the two time periods. and I wanted to have music. And you know, we had the opening scene of her of the this English girl who's a folk singer coming from England to try to discover Yorkville. She heard that Yorkville was really popular. You know, Neil Young was there, and you know, and all that sort of stuff. The word got out that it was just a big place to go to. So she wanted to break in, I guess. You know, so. That's, you know, we set a whole coffee bar up, and that actually happened to me because when I first arrived in Toronto, I didn't know anybody. I didn't know where to go. And I popped to this bar, and this bar said, why don't you try a Canadian beer? And I had a Canadian beer, and then I went to another pub, and I just wandered up this long Yonge Street, which is the longest street in the world, apparently. And I just ended up on Yorkville, and I asked this girl, where could I? You were selling newspapers, you know, for hippies, right? You know, where was a coffee bar? And I walked into this coffee bar, and I met this English lady who told me where to get a room for rent for $10, and that's how everything started. So from that I was pulling into the film.
Yeah.
This poor girl arriving didn't know anybody, and so she gets up to sing and stuff like that. There's a lot that's happened, but it was really. You know, the 70s, and we showed the 70s and the drugs and the spiritual journey and what, you know, basically the kind of giving the flavor of what it was in the 60s and early 70s. And then we jump forward and into, you know, this kind of time where this male folk singer had gone off to find himself in the Himalayas. Very deep. This is the sort of stuff that was coming out back then, right?
You know? Right.
And the idea that he suddenly recognized because this girl was filming this guy busking. So that draws them in to try to find him and rescue him and see if they can't give him life.
It's like sort of like, yeah, just to kind of summarize, like it was a kind of a relationship that formed between the main woman character and a man she met back in Yorkville back in the 60s. They, you know, had a relationship that continued into the 70s. And then they drifted apart. I think he got way into drugs, and they, you know, they struggled with their relationship, and he kind of walked out of her life. And then, you know, cut to however many years later, it's not so much cut to, because it's the film flashes back to it and then comes back to contemporary times. But, you know, now the woman has realized that they've found this former lover of hers kind of wandering the streets and playing, you know, busking and playing street music and that kind of thing. And so ultimately she goes off to kind of reconnect with him, I think is a good way to summarize it.
In the earlier period, when they were younger, he was trying to avoid going to the Vietnam War.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was the other part of the story, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And that definitely plays, you know, just kind of understanding like the way that culture was set against, you know, that kind of background war that was happening. You know, it was a little bit before my time, but I grew up in the 70s. So it was, you know, I was aware of it and, you know, saw the movies about the Vietnam War that came out, you know, Platoon and all that kind of thing. And, you know, so I became aware of that kind of cultural milieu a little bit. So that, you know, I think that your movie really kind of paints a great picture of like what that environment was like and is, you know, very nostalgic in that way for that era and that kind of feeling of, you know, kind of the hippie culture kind of rebelling against this establishment and this war and all of that stuff.
Yeah, I should say that just to go back to my early days, I used to run folk clubs in England.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And I was kind of playing the guitar a bit, and I booked people like Paul Simon for £20.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So there was that whole kind of movement where there was a band, a bomb march, which I went on. And we slept rough and things like that. And then Joan Baez was singing in Trafalgar Square. So this whole spirit of ban the bomb and peace and love and, you know, has been going on a long time in my growing up anyway. That was all part of the influence of it all, you know. And so it was really trying to captivate historical times and two time periods.
Yeah. And I can just feel like I can feel watching the movie. I can feel how much heart and how much connection you have with that time period and that kind of place, that sense of place and time, you know, and you really throw that into the movie. And, you know, I think that in the end, it's a very sweet and, you know, kind of a heartwarming movie about, you know, people and their experiences in one time and how that reflects upon them as they get into their later years and kind of reconnecting over that bond. It's a really beautiful film.
Some people like it. Some people, it's not for them, right?
But it's sure, yeah, right.
I just don't, you know, even though I worked on horror movies and stuff like that, I didn't want to make a horror movie.
Understood.
Apparently really popular. Everybody should go out and make them because you make money, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you clearly made the film you wanted to make. You didn't make a film that you thought people wanted to watch. Not that it's not that kind of film, but it's, you know, you had a particular idea of what film you wanted to make, and you clearly did that, you know, and sort of the independent film world, that's kind of what you have to do. I think if you're out there trying to make films that are their primary purpose is just to please people, then, you know, audiences are smart and audiences are going to kind of sense that you're pandering towards them and they're not going to necessarily go for that. So I think it's much better to go for the kind of stuff that you want, that you can sink your heart and soul into. If that passion comes through, then it will resonate with audiences, you know, and you'll find the audience that resonates with the kind of story that you want to tell, you know, and it seems like that's exactly what you've done.
Yeah, thanks. So if you go into like Vimeo, I'm selling it on Vimeo for $2, right? You
know? Sure, yeah.
There's all these reviews, and every time I get a review, I post it in there, right? And on my Facebook page, and it's been some really nice people.
Yeah, terrific.
Thank goodness, you know, writing and saying how it did touch them. And that's exactly what a filmmaker wants to do, you know. There's a lack of films for my age group now, so that's a big disappointment, right? You know,
it's hard. It's definitely, I think, it's a young person's game in a lot of ways. And, you know, I'm in my 50s as well, and I'm facing making my first narrative feature next year and, you know, kind of facing those same kinds of feelings. Like, am I too old to be doing this? Is anybody even going to pay attention to what I have to say just because I'm older, you know?
Oh, wiser.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I like to think, but that's not necessarily how the world thinks about it either. But I think at the end of the day, you just have to do what your heart wants to do. You just have to go for, you know, and that has to be kind of the primary reason why you make films. It can't be to please other people. It has to be to sort of please yourself through kind of sharing your own voice and your own perspective with others, you know, I think is the best way to go about it. So it certainly seems like you've done that.
Yeah. I think the other thing is the festivals didn't do too well.
Yeah. I was going to ask, did you apply to a lot of festivals or? Like,
yes, I did. And it costs money.
Right. That definitely. And it's like you spend all this money on production and then you have this other cost. And I mean, there's more costs than that. There's all kinds of post-production costs. And if you do get into a festival, some of them need DCPs, you know, so there's costs with that. There's all kinds of things. The costs really mount up as a filmmaker, like once you get the film in the can. So you're not alone in observing that or dealing with that.
I've gone to a lot of festivals, really, to see what types of films are. But I bet it's a much more kind of a creative style that people like to. I mean, ours is like, we had to kind of get everything shot as quickly as possible type of thing.
Sure.
There's no time for, you know, slow crane downs and things like that, or whatever, you know, you consider creative, right? You know, yeah, there's other ways of making movies that are really kind of arty and stuff like that.
Sure.
Like to have done that, but I was trying to tell a story, right? You know.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said for that. Is just getting, you don't want to draw too much attention to what the camera's doing. And there's certain movies where I think the story is helped by kind of fancy or dazzling camera work of certain kind. But there's also other kinds of movies where the best approach is for the camera to just kind of get out of the way and just, you know, just let the story, let the actors carry the story, let the dialogue carry the story, let the setting carry the story, and just get out of the way of that. And I certainly think this is one of those kinds of movies. So I think that's absolutely the right approach. I don't think you need to be concerned that your camera work isn't flashy or something like that, you know, I mean, compared to a lot of other films.
Cinematographer and good lighting.
Sure, absolutely.
Sound was great. I remember the sound was great. Considering what we had to fight with all the, we had planes going overhead all the time.
Oh, sure.
On the island, you know, stuff like that, right? You know, yeah. But it was one of those sort of challenges that, gee, you know, I'm getting old now, right? You know,
and Yeah.
I'm doing this, right? And this is like, wow, I actually did it. And I actually made it.
You did.
You know, absolutely, really, really pleased, you know, and people are seeing it and they are writing to me. And they, you know, it's nice to get those kinds of feedbacks and stuff like that. But boy, the distribution is really difficult. It really
So did you know that going into it? Like, had you kind of done some research and kind of heard that message? Or was it a big surprise to you once you kind of got it out there, how difficult it was going to be?
Well, I think I took an hour to think about that, but a quick answer is no, I didn't. I didn't know But it was all unfolding, you know.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, Film Hub came alive, which is just great because the film has actually gone around the world. It's playing in all these different countries, right? If you know, there's a list on the Facebook page of all the countries. So, gee, I want the film to be seen firstly, right?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I love people writing in and saying, "Oh, love that movie," right? You know. But I didn't quite know the best way to really. I didn't really put too much thought because I'm a promotional guy. I do promote stuff, right? You know, I'm a commercial cinematographer director, right? So I was kind of hardened towards that kind of world. But there needs to be a better way to get films in front of people because, like, Tubi having 75,000 movies and people have to choose from that,
right?
Some sites, I think Tubi too, actually, I think posts things on my site too. They started to do something like that. And I'm starting to see some sort of interplay between my Facebook site and them. I think, anyway, I'm, you know, can't be totally sure. But yes, nobody really contacts me from any of these TV stations or anything like that. Or can I get, I've got, you know, Film Hub has got it all laid out really well. You can go and download all this photos and art and a list of all the credits and stuff. So I think Film Hub has done a really good job.
Yeah.
It's just that the big problem is how do you get it known, you know?
Yeah.
And I have a problem just switching channels, right? You know, like I spent an evening trying to find something.
Yeah, the remote controls are so complicated now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's like definitely, it's a function of our times, I think, compared to earlier times for films where I think, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, the hard part was just getting films distributed, getting them somewhere where they even had the potential for people to see them. Now it's different. Now it's easy kind of more or less to get them out there to where they're potentially able to reach people. But how do you actually get people to click on them and watch them is like the difficult part. And there's just so many of them out there now that it's the competition is just crazy, you know? So it's like this weird, like, great democratization of you know, releasing films. You know, it was never easier to kind of release a film and get it out there into the world. And yet it was never harder to actually get people to actually watch what you put out there into the world, you know? So I think there's a big irony there. And it seems like that's something that you're right in the middle of experiencing.
Yeah. And filmmakers, we've got to try to help each other in this.
Yeah.
And there are definitely places in, you know, on Facebook that are good and people are writing in and giving me advice and helping me. And thank goodness for Facebook, you know. So I don't mind paying out for advertising for them because it really has been, you know, a good way to do it, right?
Sure.
You know? One of my inspirations was an indie film called Once.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I can see that influence,
right?
For sure. Yeah,
it cost £160,000 or something and it grossed 20 million or something, like something horrendous, right?
You know, right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, I can do that, right? You know, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was my other impetus, you know. Oh, gee, I couldn't.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's a common thing, I think, for filmmakers to kind of look to the breakout successes like that and want to emulate them somehow. And, you know, unfortunately, most filmmakers don't, but every once in a while, one does. And I think that's, you know, that's still overall, it's a good thing because it's inspiring artists to go out there and express themselves in whatever unique way they can. And every once in a while, somebody gets lucky or whatever it is, and audiences discover those films. And all of a sudden you have a new filmmaker with a new voice that millions of people are seeing, you know, and you need these kinds of, you need the world of the scrappy independent filmmaker trying to break through the sort of existing layer of gatekeepers and all that to try to get people to pay attention to the new voices in order for every once in a while, those new voices to break through and touch millions of people, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's how it works. I mean, I think it would be nice if it were easier. It would be nice if the gatekeepers weren't so, you know, sort of a kind of predatory, you know, they kind of prey on filmmakers' desires to get their films out there such that they don't make good deals with filmmakers. Filmmakers get kind of screwed from the financial perspective in terms of the deals that are signed and that kind of thing. It would be nicer if filmmakers had ways to connect with their audiences directly rather than, you know, these kind of layers of, you know, people that are looking at films and deciding yes or no when they don't even necessarily have an interest in the film. You know, it'd be nice if some of these systemic things could be addressed in some way, shape, or form. But ultimately, I do think that, like, independent film as a thing is, you know, better served by just having people make their own films in a scrappy and self, you know, do it yourself way, because that's how the new voices get out there and get seen and get heard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as I'm thinking as we're talking, I wrote a screenplay with another writer, and we had same actor, and it was the same theme, the same ideas, and it was about renovating a house. I won't say anything more because I won't get sued.
Sure. Understood.
It was a big surprise to me that, you know, my the screenplay that I started, and I hired this other writer, because he was more of a writer, would suddenly get lifted, right? You know?
Yeah.
And so that was scary for me too. So I felt that's why I was kind of deciding just to do it myself and control it myself, and not spread it around, not mix it around, and then release it, right? You know, rather than take it around to various producers and things like that, you know?
Yeah. Now, did you approach any distributors? Did you get any interest from distributors? Was it ever sort of on your radar to connect?
I did contact a couple of distributors, and they never replied.
Yeah.
You know, you go, whoa, what? You know?
Right. Well, I'll just think of how many filmmakers are you know, soliciting them with their films. And, you know, I think that there's some of them are just overwhelmed with filmmakers that want to connect with them, that kind of thing. So, yeah,
yes.
It's hard. It's definitely hard.
And, you know, mine was low budget, of course, right? You know, it doesn't look like low budget so much, but it wasn't the big blockbusters that movies are. And they're the ones that are bringing people in. So I have to say, so I'm, you know, even if you're an independent, you've got to realize that there's like big budgets out there that
definitely.
You've got to.
Yeah. And no name actors, right? So, I mean, that's a big thing is I think the bigger actors get a lot more attention from the traditional distributors. So if you don't have name actors, you know,
well, that's a ticket, isn't it? That's got people into watching the movies. If I had somebody famous, right, you know, then I've got a better chance. Obviously, yeah, that would be the real smart thing to do. The industry up in Toronto in the last year, and I didn't realize it because I'm just working away, has been really bad. It's really been hit badly.
Mm, yeah.
Waiting for the writer's strike and all of that, not really the actor's strike. And, you know, so people, yeah, the film industry's really been hit. But I did my film before the writer's strike, right?
Right, now. Right.
but it was the crew was all professional.
Yeah,
everything worked out really well. I mean, the music, getting all the music too, it's another complicated.
Oh sure, yeah, music's not easy. So yeah, when did you actually first put the film out there?
It says I was released in 21, but actually it was just me filling out the form wrong. You know, I basically was still editing it, but I wanted to get it out there. It was like in 2022, actually. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess, you know, you tried to connect with a few distributors that didn't work out so well, didn't get any responses. So basically, at what point did you decide, like, okay, I'm just going to put this out on Film Hub and get it out that way? Was that kind of early on in the process, or did it take a while for you to come to that decision?
Well, you know, like the internet's been absolutely great to try to get information about doing all this. And one man in particular, Jason Horton.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He's great. Yep.
Right. And I was watching him and I go, well, yeah, I'm an independent. He's an indie and he's telling me how to do it. This is absolutely wonderful. I mean, this guy was absolutely brilliant.
He's great. He's great. Yeah. He was the first guest on my podcast. He's the very first person I interviewed. Yeah. Yeah. He's my inaugural episode.
So my heartfelt thanks to Jason Horton for setting me straight on a few things and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, did you contact him directly, or are you just talking about
watching? I did. I contacted him directly. And yeah, he had things on the side and things like that. So he would write back and, you know, help me. I probably shouldn't be saying that because he's not going to get everybody writing him. But
I think everybody who listens to this podcast probably already knows who he is, or if they don't, they should, right?
And, no, but it was like private stuff. You know, you could ask.
Gotcha.
Him, you know, but I think he's too busy now, and he's got feature, and he's got another feature he's working with. You know, but he was the main guy.
Wow. Okay. So was he sort of the one who kind of turned you on to Film Hub? Is that how you learned about Film Hub?
That's right, yeah.
He
was the one talking about Film Hub. He was the one interviewing the CEO of the Film Hub. You know, like the whole idea of it. I mean, it was just a great idea. I mean, I don't know how they manage it. I mean, it's unbelievable. I don't know how many movies they've got, but they've got a lot, right? You know, that they have to send out. Um, I we're not too happy about them charging money now because they didn't use to charge money.
That's how it goes. I mean, any system like that, they're always eventually going to find a way to charge money.
And you know, and you just wonder, you know, just like I paid PR companies and things like that, was that really worth it? You know, is it,
you know. Yeah. Did you do any of that? Did you pay some PR companies, publicity
yes,
people
I did,
as well?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Do you want to talk about that experience a little bit?
Well, it's like a bit of a problem because I had a couple of bad reviews and they were nasty.
No.
It talked about the director's old, so with a small crew,
right?
It was that aging insult, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
A small crew, and so it was really a couple of them were really bad, but I got a lot of really good ones, and the people that watched the movies, I got really nice letters. They took time, and
that's
there was
nice.
Different countries there.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big risks of the internet. I mean, it's a wonderful thing in terms of our ability to get things out there and out there into the world. But the downside of it is that there are just so many people with, you know, there's so many trolls. There's so many people that just like to hear themselves say bad things about other people, like to put down other people. And you open yourself up to that risk. And you just have to, you can't put yourself on the internet without opening yourself up to that and being ready for it to happen. And I think you just kind of have to take it and move on and, you know, just don't worry about those people. You're always going to get haters like that. And it sucks, but it is what it is.
Yeah, there was like, it was one where people were responding to this critic, putting her down, right, you know. And I thought, well, that's great, right, you know. But it's like, it was not accurate and it was unfair and
really disappointing.
Yeah. And to understand, you know, how hard I worked and to understand what a low budget is to make. Mine was not a big budget feature film, you know, didn't get that. Oh, why am I looking at a low budget film? You know, I don't look at low budget films.
Right. Yeah, it definitely, I mean, there's a vast number of low budget films out there. And I think that, like, if you're a film viewer, you know, you have to be, if you're going to kind of click on one of those movies that isn't a movie that you've heard of, it isn't a movie that played at the local theater, you know, last week or whatever, you know, that you have to be ready for something that's a little bit rough around the edges, you know. And that's, in my mind, that's a good thing. It's a good thing for movies to be rough around the edges because they kind of come more straight from the filmmaker, you know. And that doesn't mean that I don't like, you know, every once in a while seeing a big Hollywood blockbuster and all of the skill that, you know, or, you know, something like Dune, all of the just incredible work that goes into that. And, you know, I mean, those things can blow me away. But the tiniest little indie film that is made on a, you know, a shoestring budget and just has some like really cool, interesting things to say, even if the camera work's not the best, even if the lighting's not the best, you know, those kinds of things, like that can blow me away just as much, you know. And I think if people have these expectations that everything is going to have to be a big Hollywood movie, then what are they doing clicking on movies that they've never heard of, you know, to go somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. And it's also a style too, right? Like my style is pretty straightforward.
Totally. Right.
It wasn't arty, right? You know, like, oh, angles.
Absolutely. Right.
Wasn't that, you know, I kind of like all that stuff too, you know, I like to be kind of groovy and slow pans and, you know, but this wasn't the movie for that, you know, but I mean, I just don't know whether I'll make another movie now after it's just really hard work, right?
It is. You know? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Are you thinking about making another one?
Not yet. No. I think I'm going to have a few holidays.
That makes sense, right? Yeah.
I go back to England for a trip or something like that. And I like to film in England, actually, more than anything.
Sure, yeah.
But I came over when I was 21, right? You know, and to go back and, you know, I have gone back and I've helped on some films. One was a Chaplin film, right? You know, helped on. But I would like to go back sometime and do something over there because of the characters and everything.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the sort of the affection that you have for Yorkville and Toronto at that particular time, that particular place, is definitely something that could translate equally well to some, you know, somewhat different time, somewhat different, you know, or obviously different place. And, you know, that same kind of nostalgia and sort of love for that sort of like just window into a little bit of culture, I think would translate really well for you. So
yeah, because the earlier British films were just great, you know. There's some really good stuff there, you know. And so I have to tell you that I used to go and see the Rolling Stones,
uh-huh,
and Yardbirds and Eric Clapton and all that, like, you know, when they first started, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So to me, there was a life there. And
must have been such an exciting time back then.
Yeah, I was a beatnik, you know, and stuff like that, right? You know? So, of course, we've had the beatniks, the yippies, and so forth, you know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
We ought to tell stories about, you know, our history and how it, you know, what happens a few years later to me was appealing, right? You know?
Yep, yep, yep. Absolutely. So just kind of getting back a little bit to A Song for Us, and you put it out, I think, and you said kind of 2021, but more like 2022.
To start, really, just trying to get it, so it didn't hit till 23, because it just went up, right, you know?
Yeah. So do you have any kind of other experiences that you want to talk about, like as you've kind of tried to promote it in that period of time? And any sort of, like, I think you've mentioned like Facebook ads and how that's kind of worked out pretty well for you. Have you kind of tried to quantify that and track that and see like how much?
Well, I mean, even on a Facebook side, I mean, I'm blatantly kind of advertising this, but I think it's acceptable. You know, I'll find some hippie groups, right? You
right.
know, and
yeah.
I'll try and stick it in there and hope that they're not angry at me, you know,
yeah.
But it's something they would like, you know, so I'm getting away. I've got some very nice feedback that way from,
yeah.
from people.
Now, when you say hippie groups, are you talking about people who were hippies back at that time and they're older now, or are you talking about modern hippies?
I would say, that's good. I think a lot of them are older hippies.
Yeah, yeah. I would think that this movie would really appeal to that demographic, you know, kind of people in your age group who remember that time, and this film could bring them back to that time. Not necessarily that you want to limit to that demographic or anything like that, but I do think, you know, every filmmaker has to think about what is the sort of like primary target demographic for my film, and, you know, like who do I really think would jibe well with what this film has to say. And it just seems like, yeah, that's a group that I think would be really great for you to kind of reach because of that, you know, that value of having actually lived that period of time and seen what has gone on, you know, since then.
Yeah. And I've had, you know, these feedbacks, like one from Portugal, a lady wrote to me, and another lady in Vancouver wrote, you know, and I think I did my job, you know, I think the right place, right? You know, of course, this hippies that are young still, thank goodness.
Oh yeah, right.
I like the hippie movement. You know?
Yeah, sure.
Peacenik. Yeah. Hope it gives them some strength too. You know.
I hope so. Yeah, yeah. So, any other kinds of like sort of promotional efforts or anything that you've been kind of undertaking to try to push the film, try to get more people to see it?
Let me see. I'm not very good at promoting, I tell you that. I thought I was brilliant at it.
Right. Well, it's hard. I wouldn't necessarily take it all as like a function of yourself. It's a really hard environment to promote in right now. So anybody who can do any of it, I think, deserves some praise just for getting something out there. It's a really tough, it's so competitive. There's so many people who are trying to promote themselves, and social media is just a flood of information and, you know, kind of people chiming in all the time. It's really hard to be heard among that.
I mean, you know, when we were going to the movies and when we were kids, right? Or 15 or whatever, you know, we would see it in the paper. We decide that we would like it and we'd go and see the movie. That's all we had, right?
Yeah.
And now there's like, you know, I don't know how much, Tubi's got 75,000, but there's all the channels that I'm on as well.
Yep.
I'm wondering, well, how do you market this? Seriously, how do you directly get through to them, you know? And, you know, like you said, you need a famous actor, right? You know, that would pull them in, right?
It helps.
You know?
Yep.
You know, but I couldn't go union because I didn't have the budget for that kind of thing. I mean, I kind of put it in a way, but, you know, it's that's what I had, right? And I you know, I didn't want actors, right? You wanted people. You know?
Right. Yeah, makes sense.
I think as far as I would like to get onto cinemas, I mean, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
I would like to do, but that requires basically giving it away for free, I think, you know? I mean,
yeah, or paying. I mean, you pay a theater to show it, they'll be happy to take your money to show it, you know, for wallet. Yeah. Or, you know, sometimes you can get a local art theater and kind of do a 50-50 split or something like that. But then how do you get people in the seats so that it's actually just worth the effort? These are problems that all filmmakers face, you know, is trying to figure out how to actually get people, get those eyeballs in the seats, you know? So yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah, well, I've got Apple TV and I look at all the different shows and things like that. And it's just, you know, there's a lot of movies that we watch. We go, oh God, that's awful, right? You know?
Yeah. Is there a venue in, I don't even know if Yorkville is in Toronto. Is it still a place? Is it still kind of a vibrant cultural place now?
No, it's like Beverly Hills.
It's like Beverly Hills. Oh boy. Okay.
You know, it's all the rich people moved in with their.
Yeah.
I still live close by to it, right? You know, when I came here, I just got a room for rent for $10, right? You know, two blocks away. So I've sort of come full circle.
Right. Yeah. So it's sounds a lot like sort of the Castro District in San Francisco or something like that. You know.
Yes.
Same kind of center of cultural, of a cultural movement at the time that's now just the stomping grounds for people who can afford $1 million homes, that sort of thing, you know. So
that's right. The whole hippie movement's kind of died away a bit, but it's still there because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of Facebook pages where there's hippie sites.
Yeah, they're still out there. Yeah.
Okay, I could stick it up there, right?
Right. And they're probably just not living in the same neighborhoods. They're not living in Yorkville. They're not living in Castro. They're probably not even living in the Bay Area, you know, anymore. It's just too expensive. So they're in different places that are more affordable.
Yeah. So I lived in Venice when I first arrived in LA, and that was kind of like a nice little hippie area.
Same story.
And of course, San Francisco. I love San Francisco. I would love to go back there again. It's a great place, right?
Yeah, it is. It's a great city. Great city to visit. I don't know if I'd want to live there. It's so expensive, but it's a great city to visit.
Yeah. But as far as marketing, it's sort of, I guess we could hand out pamphlets as they come out to the cinema from one particular movie and, you know, a little flyer here, you know, what the movie. But no, it's, you know, they might take that pamphlet home. I know I write down names of the movies I want to watch and then I put the paper down and it's gone, right? You know,
yeah,
I
go, right.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's so much out there, but yet I'm not actually finding all the right movies I should watch. And so reviews are really important, I guess, you know.
For sure, yeah.
I've had some nice reviews and it's getting people into the seats. And I think that is, gosh, we've all got to discuss how we can do that or how we're doing it, right? You know, and I feel kind of broken, you know, that I haven't been able to get everybody to go there. But I'm on an awful lot of sites to go and watch the movie, you know, and you know, Amazon Prime and all that, like everybody else nowadays. And,
right, yeah.
Apple TV, right, which is apparently a good pair, I've been told, And so there's all these other sites that, you know, hopefully there'll be a time when people, it'll be raining or something, right?
yep. And they'll find it, yeah.
But it is trying to, if we could just lick that problem of trying to get people to see the movie.
Yep.
Yeah, and of course, there are reviewers, right, you know, out there that do this for a living. So you pay them, right, you know? And
absolutely. Yeah, it's daunting, though. It's daunting. It's not an easy task. But, it sounds like you're reaching people. You're getting people writing letters to you about the film. You know, you may not be reaching them in huge numbers, but it sounds like you're reaching them and, getting, like, you know, good, warm responses, I think, is definitely, like, every one of those responses helps justify why you made the movie and why you put so much time and sweat and money into the movie, you know. And I think as filmmakers, like, it helps to just focus on that, you know, focus on what the positive things that come in to you are, like the ways that it actually affects people's lives, and not be so fixated on how much money it earns or, you know, how many clicks it's gotten and all those kinds of things, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the one thing is, it's great that I made it at this age, right? You know, I finally did it, you know.
Definitely, right.
But I didn't jeopardize the family.
Yeah. Exactly, right. So what's next for you? Like, what do you have on your plate next, if anything?
Well, first of all, I've got all my movies and films that I've made, and I want to try to, I'm like going back in time, trying to get them off the hard drives.
Oh, nice.
I've got
really
hard drives, man. I feel like it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just to try to create. So I'm at a cleaning up stage. it'd be great to make another movie, and I still might. I've got to get a good idea or a good script from somebody, but I have to finance it myself because people don't fund old people, right? You know, they have all these grants. Everything's geared to the younger person, which is fine. I didn't have that when I was younger. There was not that kind of help that there is now, you know. But I sort of sat around the table where they give out grants and they're all young people. I was just, okay, you know, I was young too, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I'm the odd guy there.
right.
Trying to make a film. But yeah, I'm going to do a little bit of traveling, I think. I think that's probably what...
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Over to England and see what's going on there.
And maybe you'll derive, you know, you travel in England and maybe an idea will come to you for your next movie.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, I came over in 67. Here I am still longing to go back, like what I also call my home, you know.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It's kind of, you know, we've got a lot of movie makers here in Toronto, right?
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
And in Vancouver and elsewhere. And so there's an awful lot of filmmakers here trying to make that Canadian movie or trying to break into Canadian Broadcasting Corporation or whatever, you know. And there's all these love movies, you know, I can't remember what the name of it's called, but it's, you know, like it's just tacky as far as I'm concerned. But they're making right. those movies and stuff. You know?
Yep. All right. Well, I think, you know, we've been talking for a good hour or so. Is there anything else that, you know, anything we didn't talk about that you kind of wanted to cover or anything you wanted to add or say?
Well, I think it's most important for filmmakers and yourself, you know, that what you're doing is great. And that's really important. It's just getting honest opinions from people about what the truth is.
Yeah, yeah.
About the business and the way it's run, and Justin Horton was a good man for that, right? You know, I think that we've got to talk about how we're going to get this promoted, because, you know, how do you compete with the 75,000 Tubi movies, right? You know, how do you get isolated? They do a little bit, you know, and I think I would encourage these companies that are streaming the movies, if they start to see people watching their movies, is to try and boost it a little bit with some advertising or promotion, and try to find the movies that are not getting good, that are not getting shown, and try to at least pay out. I mean, we've paid out for the movie. Why don't they pay out for the advertising, right? You know.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's so. Yeah, it's all about money, isn't it? You know.
It is. Unfortunately, it is. Yep.
Yeah. So if I make another movie, I still won't expect to get paid.
I think that's probably a good expectation to carry and make it for other reasons than that. Yeah.
Yeah. And getting a little bit of money and you know, make a lot of people happy. You know, the actors are really happy and stuff like that. You know, stuff like that. And I've connected with people about their past, which they haven't seen a film of their period.
Yeah.
Pretty well. For many years now, you know, there's not that been covered, right? You know, so so I think less violence, you know, I would appreciate that, you know.
Yeah.
the world's in a troubled time, so
right, right.
Yeah. I'll give you my peace symbol, right?
Sure, you know? yeah, okay. Yep. Those are great words. I appreciate you sharing everything with us and your story. You know, where can people follow you or, you know, watch the movie? Or get in touch with you if they have any questions
okay. Free advertising, right?
So, sure. Yeah. This is your time to promote.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook under Peter Hitchcock.
Got it. Okay. Course,
right. You know, and they can just write to me there. That's really good. And then a song for us is www.asongforus.com. And then I'm on Facebook. Movie A Song for Us. They can go there and sort of look at all the stuff that I've been trying to promote. So I just stick all my ads up there for people to see how I'm trying to promote it, because that's the only help I can really offer right now is to get people to see their movies. You know, how the hell do you do it, right? You know, that's a big question right now.
It is.
Yeah. And to have an advertising budget, but how much does it cost to keep advertising? Because you've got to keep advertising every day to tell people to watch your movie, right? You know, that ain't going to happen, you know.
It's a conundrum. It is.
Yeah, and I, And I think, like everybody, we find a hard time trying to find a movie that we like or we want to watch. You know? So I don't know if we can have more another magazine or whatever trying to show all these movies that are up now and discuss them. I mean, I've had lots of free press releases and things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Librarian. I mean, that's been great. Have it in the library. I never thought of that, right? And they gave me a really nice read up and everything like that, you know. And to see that there's people out are doing that, you know. There is some nice people out there that can do that.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I hear your words that I think what we really need to do in this era of information overload is find a way to connect people that want to hear a particular source of information with that information without the huge flood of information that goes with it and goes with everything, you know. And as far as, you know, people seeing films is concerned, I'd like to see much better ways for the people who want to see a certain kind of film be able to find those kinds of films, and the people who have those kinds of films be able to find those people that would be a good audience for that kind of film. I think that kind of like direct filmmaker to audience connection gets lost in all of this kind of middle ground gatekeeper content that's out there, you know, the 75,000 movies on Tubi and that kind of thing. So I don't know what the right solution to that is, but I'd love to see somebody figure it out. All right, that's all for today. Thanks everybody for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate and or review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. That is the best way that you can help me grow the show and reach a wider audience of independent filmmakers and others who just want to try to understand this crazy, crazy world of independent film distribution. As always, feel free to contact me directly with any feedback or suggestions for the show. You can find me on Twitter, or should I say X, or Instagram at DarkRoseColin, or you can email me at Colin@DarkRosePictures.com. That's Colin with one L, C-O-L-I-N, @DarkRosePictures.com. And by the way, DarkRosePictures.com is my website for my feature and other projects. Its purpose is not just to promote my films, but to tell the story with honesty and transparency of my own personal filmmaking journey. So if you want to follow the process of an independent filmmaker from development to distribution, this is a great way to do that. So check it out, DarkRosePictures.com. Anyway, a warm thank you to Peter Hitchcock for opening up about his experiences with A Song for Us. Another big thanks to Jeff Vrijmoot for keeping up with the editing. I've got more great guests lined up in the coming weeks talking all things indie distribution, so please do stay tuned, keep getting those movies out there into the world, and thank you so much for listening. See you next week.